Moncrief on News Talk. Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone. The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Simon Tierney joins us once again on News Talk. Funny thing, Simon, just this morning when I was having my toast, I realised we'd run out of marmalade.
You're a marmalade man.
I am a marmalade. No, well, I mean, I had jam and it's not my day isn't ruined if I have jam. Okay. I quite like a bit of jam too.
Now, when you take your marmalade on your toast, do you take a fine chip or a coarse chip?
I'd prefer a fine chip.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Controversial.
Yeah, is it?
Purists now would be very fond of the coarse chip. Although, it's interesting to note that the earliest marmalades were like the fine chip that you like. The coarser chip came in much later, and the reason it was added, according to the advertising in the 19th century, was because it aided the breakage of wind.
As in encouraged it, or oh, right, well then, that's not really a compelling argument in favour of it, I would have thought, for many households. Yeah, I just find that the thicker stuff, it's more difficult to spread, bits of it stick in your teeth, it's more awkward.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't see, like, there's no great benefit.
But I love it. I like my marmalade so chunky that you need a fork to eat it.
Right, okay. That's seriously, and you have to go have a good wash your hands because it'd be very sticky afterwards.
Yes, indeed.
The best intent of the world. Yeah.
This all started. I mean, I have to say, when I started researching this at the end of last week, Sean, I was astonished to discover that the original marmalade has nothing to do with oranges whatsoever.
Ah.
And it makes sense because the etymology tells us that the word marmalade derives from the Portuguese marmelo, which means quince. Now, any cheese aficionados will be aware that we often take a little bit of quince preserve with a cheese. This is a fruit that is grown in the south of Europe, Spain, Portugal, etc. And it's turned into this kind of paste, which we still enjoy with cheese, as I say. But in the 17th century, this paste of quince was exported to the British Isles. The British enjoyed eating this as a kind of a sweetmeat. And from the word marmello, they started to call it marmalade. And these marmalades were just quince pastes. And it was in the, what should we say, the very end of the 17th century, 1677 to be precise, that we see the first ever recipe for a marmalade or a marmalade of oranges, as it was described. Now, when it transitioned to oranges, it retained the marmalade, the marmello name. But we move from Portugal to Spain and, of course, the Seville orange. Anyone who enjoys making marmalade will be well aware that in December and January, which is marmalade season, that you will get these oranges from Seville, which are very bitter. The Chinese were brought from China to the south of Spain. They were considered lucky. So the Moors in Moorish Spain, they planted extensively with these bitter oranges because they thought they would bring good fortune on everyone. But the Spanish actually don't like eating these oranges. If you go to Seville, it's part of the urban landscape. There are literally orange trees everywhere.
Yeah.
And there are 15,000 tons of Seville oranges picked every year in that city. And the Spanish don't eat them. They're all sent to us here in Ireland and the British across the water because we are the ones who love marmalade the most.
Right, because they don't. Yeah, you don't really get marmalade there.
No, you don't. You don't really on the continent that much at all. They prefer to have sweet oranges or maybe a sweet orange jam, but that's different to marmalade, of course. And the big difference is this. Let's break it down. Marmalade is much more bitter experience. That's partly because of the Seville orange is a very bitter fruit. Now, there is a huge amount of sugar put into it, but also an orange maker will add lemon juice to create that bitter flavor, but also the pips from the orange will be put in muslin bag, tied up and put in the cooking process. And the pips release pectin. And pectin is a substance which is kind of a thickening agent and also gives a kind of a bitter flavor to it as well. So all that was happening in the late 17th century. But as I say, at that point, it was still a kind of semi-solid substance. It certainly was not spreadable.
Mm.
And it would have been eaten in the evening, and it would have been eaten with a fork as a sweetmeat.
Right, okay. So that's a dessert of some of sort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was not something that you were spreading on your Brennan's slice of toast.
No.
At all.
Okay.
Now, things change with the arrival of the Kellers. The Kellers of Dundee, the Scottish, you know, like they do with their whiskies, they claim all sorts of responsibility for marmalade. And perhaps it's perhaps that's fair enough, because this family, the Kellers, Janet and James, a son and mother combo, in the late 18th century, they started the world's first commercial enterprise regarding marmalade in Dundee, the city of Dundee. It's still being made to this day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very famous marmalade. But they made a number of innovations, Sean, which really made marmalade what it is today. The first thing that the Kellers did is they added more water to the recipe, therefore making it more liquid in its consistency.
Mm.
That meant that it was spreadable. And the second thing that they did was that they added much coarser peel, or chip, as they called it in Scottish parlance, into the recipe.
Right.
And as I said at the top, the reason they did that was because marmalade was seen as a kind of a recipe for encouraging the passage of wind.
Yes.
And they moved it to the breakfast table.
And why did that happen, that it was moved to the breakfast table?
So for two reasons. Firstly, because it became spreadable for the first time, and
right,
people started putting it on bread.
Mm.
Before that, it was not spreadable.
Mm.
And secondly, they thought that it was very important to deal with flatulence at the beginning of the day, not at the end of
the day. I think that's a sound philosophy, really,
yeah.
Yes.
And they believed in this so much that it was part of their early advertising. It's amazing how much flatulence was used in the advertising of a whole host of British products in the 19th century. What comes to mind there, Sean, is the McVitie's digestive biscuit. That was sold in the late 19th century when biscuits became popular. They were sold purely, it's in the name, digestive biscuit.
Yeah,
it was sold
purely as
a solution to flatulence. So, that was a big selling point in those days, Sean. Let's put it that way. But the Kellers, they were the first commercial producers of marmalade. Of course, this is, you know, largely the 19th century. We're talking about the British Empire. They had an enormous trade route open to them. And the Keller product, which was sold in these beautiful white stone jars with the Keller brand on them, which you may have seen pictures of, these were sold all through the British Empire. You know, the Raj in India, there was this kind of culture of an English or a British gentleman never going anywhere without his jar of marmalade. I mean, Edmund Hillary brought his, now he's from New Zealand, of course, before I get attacked, but that was part of the Commonwealth and he was part of a British expedition to Mount Everest. He brought a jar of marmalade with him to the very top of Mount Everest, as did Captain Scott to
My
the
word.
South Pole. So it was really seen as this sort of massively important part of the toolkit of the adventurer.
Yeah, but it still seems to be, in terms of the love afforded to marmalade, it's just really these islands, as we like to say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because of the stretch of the British Empire, it is popular in New Zealand and Australia, perhaps not as much as their beloved Vegemite, but it is popular in those countries. I think if you went to America now, I'm not sure if they would even know what you were on about.
No, probably not.
When you mentioned marmalade.
It's really interesting, the reaction to this. I lived in Argentina. Dulce de membrillo with a thick slice of cream cheese was a revelation. Yum. I assume that's some sort of Argentinian marmalade you're referring to. Fiona says, marmalade makes me gag. Really disgusting. My mother absolutely loved it and was always making it and keeping me jars, frequently using new recipes. She made one once with lemon, orange and grapefruit. I was immensely proud of it all. One day I said, Mom, I've been telling you all my life I absolutely hate marmalade. I'm now 45. She said, oh, totally marmalade blind, says Fiona. Dan says marmalade would be a lovely orangey jam only for those disgusting pieces of rind, but that's kind of the point. Can you ask Marmalade Man if it's possible to get a jar of only rind?
Marmalade Man.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
That's interesting because Dan, like, it's the rind that's disgusting. Jonathan thinks it's the rind that's the yummy bit.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not going to, if that's what you're into, just get an orange and just chop it up.
Have you ever had a marmalade and cheese sandwich?
Well, you know, you'd have quince with cheese. The original marmalade was made with quince. I mean, I'll tell you one thing I do. Sean, like that texture there is, I love dipping sausages into marmalade.
That's so weird. Marmalade and sausage sandwich, Peter says.
I love it. It's the sweet and savoury together. It's a winner.
Tig says that my junior cert French textbook told me that the word marmalade comes from Marie Malade, where marmalade was an elixir made for a sick Queen Mary, Queen of Scots. I've been telling this tale for over a decade. Have I been spreading lies?
Yeah, that's fake news. No, it comes from marmelo, which is the Portuguese for quince.
Yeah, and he's not the only person to have texted in that particular story. And Connor, though, says, I don't trust people who eat marmalade.
Wow, that's going to be a struggle to get through life.
That's going to be a struggle, Connor. That means you're never going to trust anyone. Anyway, thanks for that, Connor. Thanks, Simon, of course, as well. Simon Tierney there. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on the all marmalade eating, totally untrustworthy News Talk station.
Moncrief on News Talk.